This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This week, Dr. Richard Land guest hosted the program for Tony from Charlotte, North Carolina. Coming up later in the show, Fox News' Todd Starnes joined Dr. Land with the latest on a couple of important religious liberty cases. Also, General Jerry Boykin was on to spotlight what America should be doing to deal with the ISIS terror threat after reports about the ineffectiveness of the air campaign went public. But first, can we put the truth of the gospel on trial? That's exactly what best-selling author and attorney David Limbaugh did in his new book, Jesus on Trial, A Lawyer Affirms the Truth of the Gospel. David Limbaugh joined Dr. Land earlier this week to talk about it.
David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Dr. Land, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, listen, we're excited to have you on, and we're also excited that you're going to be coming to Charlotte to be with us at our Southern Evangelical Seminary Apologetics Conference and speaking about your book and signing your book Friday night at Calvary Church here in Charlotte.
I am really looking forward to being a part of that conference and finally learning about some of the stuff I pretended to know about when I wrote this book.
Well, listen, we're delighted that you've chosen to study with us and to use us as a resource, and I can't tell you how excited people are that you're coming and waiting to hear from you about this book. You know, I really was intrigued by the book because you bring a perspective that I just can't have, because I grew up in a Christian home. I can never remember a moment in my conscious memory when my mother wasn't telling me that Jesus loved me and died on the cross for me, and he had a wonderful plan for my life. And so to read your story of being a skeptic, and you know, as I read your story, I kept thinking about C.S. Lewis. You know, C.S. Lewis said that he was dragged, kicking and screaming and looking for a way of escape to the gospel. I mean, you were just drawn in inexorably by the evidence, weren't you?
Absolutely, which vindicates the entire discipline of apologetics, I think. And I get this from people a lot. Some Christians say, I think they're put off by the very idea of apologetics. Mm-hmm. And so now we talk about what has been termed an apologetic for apologetics, defending the defense of the faith. And I know you guys deal with this a lot.
Absolutely.
Because some people are offended thinking it all ought to be all a matter of innocent faith, come to faith like with the innocence of a child. I wish it were so. I wish it had been so easy for me, but it isn't. And I will say this, too. I just think people ought to realize how important apologetics is for reaffirming the faith of believers. And that's the other part of the reason I wrote my book. And even writing a book like this, my gosh, does it solidify your faith or what? The more you fly closer to the flame, to the Word of God, the more you believe it, is my view.
Now, this thing's been getting incredible response, even though the New York Times didn't want to admit it at first. I understand that they finally had to acknowledge that you were a bestseller. It must have killed them to do so. They probably had to take a Prozac as a result. But what has been your, as you've gone throughout the country on this book tour, I would guess that you have gotten a tremendous response from Christians who are encouraged in their faith by reading this book.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I really have gotten an overwhelmingly positive response. I think people appreciate the fact that a person largely in the secular community has come out with a book of apologetics like this. And one of my motives in doing this, and I initially was very hesitant to do it because I'm well aware of my limitations. I'm well aware that I am not an apologist by training or a theologian by training, even though I've had one course at Southern Evangelical Seminary, and I loved it, and I learned a lot, and I incorporated a few ideas from that into my book. But I don't have any degrees or anything. I just have 3 hours of that.
Now, David, we can remedy that, brother. We have distance learning.
I'm working on it.
Amen.
But the point is, they said, my publisher, you need to examine this as a lawyer. Well, the truth is, no. I need to examine this as a student of Christian apologists who are every bit as analytical and probably more so than lawyers. They've done all the heavy lifting, and I want to help organize it in a way that people that are skeptics now, like I used to be, can understand it. But I also want to structure the book in a way that reflected my own journey, my enthusiasm for the Bible, the unity of the Bible, these aha moments that I had, and put a little primer on, in theology on there, because when I first became a Christian, I was anxious to have my learning curve accelerated, and I want to help a young Christian get an idea of what we Christians believe. But I think I've gotten a good response because people are, I think they're enthusiastic about the fact. See, here's what I found, Dr. Lamb. This is an admission, and it vindicates my decision to do this book. Okay, people say, man, nobody's ever done a book like this. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Mm. There have been 100 apologetics books. But see, the audience I write to is not familiar with it. And I'm excited that they're now being introduced to this awesome field. Don't you think that's exciting?
Oh, I do. I do. I'm convinced that the way we're going to spell evangelism, discipleship, and missions in the 21st century is apologetics.
Yeah.
And what I love about your book, and this is part of the twin pillars of our founding, which are global evangelism and apologetics, we don't want to just win the argument. We want to win the person to faith in Christ. Our enemy is not our opponents. Our enemy is the Prince of Darkness.
There you go. Yes. And so I really wish people would understand, fellow Christians would understand, that these kind of arguments help equip evangelists to go out and defend the faith and spread the gospel. It empowers evangelism, and I wish they would understand that aspect of it as well.
You know, I'm absolutely convinced that one of the reasons we're losing our young people out of the church is we're not preparing them. You know, there's a great ad. It shows a fifth grade student in a college classroom. And it says, you know, would you send your fifth grader off to college with a fifth grade education? Too often, that's what Christian parents do when it comes to the spiritual things and the answers to the criticism of the Bible. We send them off to college with a fifth grade education.
Do you know, Dr. Land, that's one of the things that William Lane Craig, who's just, as you know, a brilliant Christian philosopher/ apologist, he says that our parents, we Christian parents, are downright negligent because we allow our kids to go away to school without inoculation against the indoctrination that they're inevitably going to be subjected to. I have two girls now in college, and before they went to school, this may sound odd to some people, despite having raised them, my wife and I raised them as Christians, and them being around the house and being exposed to Christian the worldview and in the church by osmosis, I was still concerned with the militant indoctrination, the aggressive indoctrination they're about to receive. So I would take each of them respectively before they went to school for about 10 weeks every weekend and discuss theology and politics with them and prepared them specifically. Here's what the liberals are going to say. The theological and political liberals are going to tell you that they have a monopoly on compassion, that you don't care, that Christians don't care, that Jesus only cared about the poor, that he wanted to redistribute. Well, you know the whole nine yards.
I do.
I really do think it helped them. And so we've got to do that as parents.
Absolutely we do. And, there's no question about that. And I believe it's part of raising our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. We've got to go. I just want to say to David Limbaugh, thank you for being with us. Get his book.
You can find out more about David Limbaugh and his book when you visit us at tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
America's first liberty, the freedom of religion, is being threatened. It's being pushed out of our public life, out of our schools, and even out of our churches. FRC has partnered with Liberty Institute to document these events. Our new report is titled, Undeniable, The Survey of Hostility to Religion in America. It's not exhaustive, but it records almost 1,200 incidents of hostility to religion. We invite you to download your copy at religioushostility.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch Weekly. Well, the attacks on religious liberty keep on coming, and Fox News' Todd Starnes joined Dr. Richard Land with the latest on two important cases.
Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Dr. Land. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Well, it's good visiting with you. I wish you could be under happier circumstances, but I must confess that I am appalled by this story because I was part of the group that fought the battle and won the war for the Equal Access Clause and the Equal Access Act, which was upheld by the Supreme Court overwhelmingly, that if you're going to have extracurricular student clubs, you cannot ostracize and censor religious clubs. If you have a fishing club, you gotta open it up to religious clubs. And yet this school in New York is just brazenly basically refusing to accept constitutional rulings.
Yes, Dr. Lane, you're absolutely right. So this story coming to us from Long Island, New York, Ward Melville High School. Last year, a group of students wanted to start a Christian club there, a service club. They were going to be doing things like stocking food pantries and doing things of that nature, and the school turned them down. Well, they retained the services of the Liberty Institute, and it wasn't too long after that that the school had a change of heart and said there had just been some sort of a miscommunication, and they went ahead and approved the club. Well, this year, the new school year rolled around, and the students had to apply once again to be an officially recognized club. And when they went to apply, the assistant principal turned them down and told them they did not have enough members. They did not meet the 20-student threshold that they require for clubs. And Dr. Lamb, what's interesting about that is last year, this club only had 12 students. So now, all of a sudden, they have a membership requirement at this school. And as it stands right now, the school will not recognize this Christian club, even though they do, in fact, have a fishing club, as you mentioned, and they have a gay-straight alliance.
You know, when this ruling came down from the Supreme Court, I remember it very well, to show you the extent of bias that there is against Christians in some parts of the country when it comes to public school elites, educational elites. There were something like 40,000 high schools in the United States, almost all either on the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, or on the East Coast, that said, well, if we have to have Christian clubs, then we won't have any clubs. And they did away with all extracurricular clubs in order not to have Christian clubs. So, you know, and that was what, 20 years ago that ruling came down from the Supreme Court. So now you see this hostility has just continued and increased in certain areas of the country.
Oh, it has, Dr. Land. I had a chance to speak with Hiram Sasser, one of the pit bull attorneys over at the Liberty Institute. And he said, look, it doesn't matter if there were two kids. The school still has to recognize the club. Now, the school says, well, we don't have the money. Then they said, we don't have the money. First, it wasn't they didn't have enough students. They had 17 and not 20. Then they didn't have enough money. And I said, well, what do they need the money for? And they said, well, we have to pay the teachers to be sponsors of the club. So it seems as though they are really sort of sticking it to the Christian club here. And Hiram Sasser says they are prepared, if need be, to pursue this in a court of law. They've already sent a warning letter to the school to tell them they've got that they just have a few days to change their policy or else they're going to take the next step.
Well, good. I hope that they are prepared to follow through with that because, you know, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, and sometimes you have to defend your rights or else you lose them. And I'll tell you, a lot of people fought really hard to get that Equal Access Act passed and to have the Supreme Court uphold that Equal Access Act, which basically just says you can't discriminate against Christians.
Dr. Lamb, one of my readers suggested that they should have called the club the Fishers of Men Club, and maybe they could have gotten it under the radar.
Well, then they would have got them for sexual or gender bias.
fisher of people.
It's, it had the fishers of people, fishers of humans, you know, fishers of humankind. The extent of political correctness has really run amok, hasn't it?
Well, it has, Dr. Lennon. As a matter of fact, we have just posted a brand new column, a sort of breaking culture war news. Human Rights Commission in Lexington, Kentucky, has issued an edict that a t-shirt, Christian t-shirt company, violated their non-discrimination ordinance by refusing to print gay pride t-shirts. And Dr. Landis' column is up at foxnews.com right now, and the executive director of the Human Rights Commission told me that Christian business owners need to leave their religion at home.
Well, that certainly doesn't sound like the free exercise of religion that we are guaranteed in the Constitution, does it?
I mean, basically,
what they just did violates the Constitution of the United States. The First Amendment says there'll be no governmental interference with the free exercise of religion. Well, the Human Rights Commission, unfortunately, is a government entity. And they are interfering with the free exercise of this company's freedom of their religious beliefs.
Alliance Defending Freedom is representing the owner of the t-shirt company in this instance, and I suspect they are going to appeal this, of course. But I think it certainly gives people the lay of the land and the hostility that's out there, not just in the public school sector, but also in the public marketplace and the business community as well. Christians are coming under attack for their beliefs.
Well, and it also shows that, once again, the ugly face of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender movement. They are not a live and let live bunch. They are, we're going to ram this down your throat, we're going to force you to accept this, or we're going to run you out of business. It's not as if if this company won't make their t-shirts won't get made. I mean, there are lots of t-shirt companies. It's just like the baker in Colorado. It wasn't as if they weren't going to be able to find somebody to bake them a cake. The question is whether they're going to have the legal right to force someone to do that which violates their religious conscience.
You can find out more about these cases, as well as other religious liberty issues, when you stop by TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, check out the I Stand t-shirts we have available and take a stand with Family Research Council. That's at TonyPerkins.com and click on the I Stand graphic on the left-hand side. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this.
Should Christians get involved in politics or focus on evangelism? Historically, Christians have disagreed, but theologian and author Dr. Wayne Grudem has some answers in his new booklet titled, Why Christians Should Seek to Influence Government for Good. Dr. Grudem explores the history and theology of Christian public service and challenges us to be well-informed and vote wisely. So what will you do with the opportunity you've been given? To download your copy of this booklet, visit frc.org/Christian Influence.
The reports this week are that ISIS continues to move closer to the border of Turkey, and by all accounts, our battle plan is a total mess. With all the confusion, what should be the real American response? FRC's Executive Vice President and founding member of the Army's Delta Force, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, joined Dr. Land to talk about it.
General Boykin, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Land. Glad to be with you.
Well, I have been aching to ask you about this ever since I started reading this. First of all, about Leon Panetta's revelations in his new book, and coupled with, I'm just going to read you part of the leading op-ed in the Wall Street Journal this morning, ISIS Marches to a Massacre. For 3 weeks, the U.S. has watched, while doing little to help, undermanned Syrian Kurdish fighters holding out against the terrorist army that is using stolen American weapons. The black flag of ISIS appeared Monday above buildings in an outlying district of Kobani, which before the war had a population of some 50,000 people. After the Kurds begged for help, the U.S. on Tuesday escalated airstrikes against ISIS artillery positions near Kobani, but the bombing is late and insufficient. ISIS fighters move in small teams, and many are dug into urban areas. Is this as catastrophic as it appears to be on the surface?
Well, I think that it reflects that there is no coherent strategy there for dealing with ISIS. I think that, you know, starting with the president's speech where he said that ISIS is not Islam, it has gone downhill from there. Dr. Land, we are not going to destroy ISIS moving at a snail's pace and bombing abandoned equipment. This is going to require a robust intelligence capability to tell us exactly where they are. It's going to require special operations forces to designate targets, meaningful targets that will have high impact. And then finally, it's going to require a direct arming of the Kurds, not through the Iraqi government, but arm them directly. Give them the heavy weapons and the materiel that they need to be able to defend cities like Kobani.
Well, you know, General, what frustrates me is that over a month ago, Mr. Obama said that he was going to arm the Kurds directly. I'm told we've given nothing directly to the Kurds. He thinks if he gives a speech about something, that means it gets done.
No, the Kurds have not been armed, and in fact, the military materiel that has gone allegedly to the Kurds, it really has been stopped when it got to the Iraq government. Keep in mind, the Iraqis have never been, certainly the Shia Iraqis have never been very fond of the Kurds, just kind of like the Turks. Now, you know, Kurds are Sunni, Shia, and Christian, but they don't identify with their religion. They, as far as they are concerned, they're Kurds first, and the religion is kind of a secondary issue at best.
The Kurds are our second most reliable ally in the Middle East after Israel, and have been since World War II. And we continue to give them the back of our hand instead of having their back.
That's right. And remember, after the first Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein killed about 30,000 of them with chemical weapons, we did nothing. This precedes Barack Obama. We did nothing. We stood by and watched it occur. And you're absolutely right, Dr. Land. They have been consistent allies. I mean, many of them are ancient Assyrians. They've been consistent allies of America. They've operated with us during the first Gulf War. They also, when we went in 2003, remember that it was the Kurds plus trainers from the 5th Special Forces Group out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, that tied up five Iraqi divisions in the north that could never get to Baghdad to get in the fight there. They are our friends, and we need to take care of them and insist on a homeland for
them.
Well,
and people need to understand that Kurdistan is an ethnic nation, an ethnic entity that spills over. Unfortunately, they're in a dangerous neighborhood.
Yep.
Part of Kurdistan is in present-day Iraq. Part of Kurdistan is in present-day Turkey. And part of Kurdistan is in present-day Iran. And I think America ought to be doing everything, given that our allies, the Turks, have been, how shall I put it, a pain in the neck, and the Iranians are our enemies, and the Iraqis have been shown to be impotent and useless. We ought to be supporting an independent Kurdistan, and we ought to be arming them to the teeth to defend themselves and their region from some really bad people in those neighborhoods, ISIS and Turkey and Iran.
But I think what is imperative here is for the president and his national security team to get serious about this. Either build Fortress America and don't let them come into our country, and make sure that we stop any opportunity for them to come in, or kill them where they are. Kill them in place.
Right.
I opt for killing them where they are so that we don't have to build Fortress America, which ultimately would rob us of our liberties anyhow. Kill them where they
I
are,
agree.
But get serious about
well,
it.
And you know, I must confess to you that especially after reading Leon Panetta's book, which I did. I stayed up and read it. I don't know if I'm willing to commit American ground forces under this president, because I don't trust him to have their back.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with you. And look, I think that it's time for a clean sweep in our Department of Defense, too. I mean, I know many of these guys that are in the Joint Chiefs over there now. And I must tell you that either Obama is completely ignoring them, or they are just giving him some bad advice. Now, I think it's the former. I think he's just completely ignoring them, which means they have no influence. That's why Gates and Panetta have not impressed me with their books, because what I think they did is reveal that they were cowards. They didn't have the guts to stand up to this president, and if he would not do the right thing, then to resign and protest.
Well, and they also profited. Yeah. You know, if they could have gone and done the same thing by giving testimony before a congressional committee. But they are actually profiting by millions of dollars in sales of their book for doing what they should have done at the time, which was go public with their disagreement with the president.
Well, that's right. And I think that now is a time when we should see some resignations at senior levels of our military in protest for a feckless policy that is going to ultimately not protect America and maybe get Americans killed.
Well, it's going to end up getting more Americans killed either over there or here or both. Well, General, thank you. Once again, thank you for your service to our country. And thank you for your willingness to continue to serve by other means, serving with the Family Research Council. I happen to know how delighted they are to have you there, because I've talked to some of the folks there, and they keep pinching themselves that they've got you there. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have on this edition of Washington Watch Weekly. To find out more about Family Research Council and the many areas we're involved in, head on over to TonyPerkins.com. And I'd like to close out today's program just like Tony always does, with the words of the Apostle Paul, when he says in Ephesians, "Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to just keep standing." Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new Watch line at 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234.